Have you ever noticed how the most zealous believers sometimes become the most judgmental? It's a paradox that plays out in churches worldwide. Accidental Pharisees tackles this uncomfortable truth with refreshing candor. What makes it particularly powerful is how it holds up a mirror to those who consider themselves the most devoted followers of Jesus. Even renowned pastor Tim Keller admitted this book made me wince with recognition several times. The journey typically begins innocently, perhaps through an eye-opening mission trip or a powerful sermon that inspires greater commitment. The danger emerges when personal pursuit of holiness transforms into frustration with those who seem less committed, eventually evolving into contempt and arrogance. Unlike the ancient Pharisees who were deliberately legalistic, accidental Pharisees are well-intentioned believers who genuinely want to honor God. That's what makes this spiritual condition so insidious. It masquerades as devotion while actually undermining God's work. Surprisingly, in Jesus' day, being called a Pharisee was actually a compliment. They were respected for their theological knowledge and spiritual zeal, all qualities modern Christians admire. The Pharisees saw themselves as God's biggest fans, yet opposed him when he appeared in ways that challenged their religious assumptions. Joseph of Arimathea, a wealthy Sanhedrin member and secret disciple of Jesus, challenges our typical view of discipleship. Though modern churches might dismiss him as lukewarm, Joseph proved crucial. Without him, Jesus' body would have been discarded, leaving no empty tomb. He acted when other disciples disappeared, and despite his wealth and secrecy, Jesus called him righteous. This reveals how Jesus approached discipleship differently with different people. While some were called to radical sacrifice, others were told to stay home. He welcomed the woman who simply touched his garment and invited the weary to find rest in his easy yoke, teachings that contrast sharply with modern expectations of discipleship. Pride infiltrates through three destructive paths: logi disease, self-deception, and comparison. Logi disease is our tendency to spot flaws in others while ignoring our own, like Carolyn Bourne's viral email criticizing her future daughter-in-law's manners while being blind to her own social failures. Self-deception magnifies this problem. When rating themselves on traits like honesty and morality, most people place themselves above average, a statistical impossibility that fuels judgment of others. Comparison completes these toxic elements. While not inherently negative, spiritual comparisons fail because we can't know others' hearts or backgrounds. Take Ryan and Connor. Ryan's natural conflict resolution skills versus Connor's remarkable progress despite his violent upbringing shows why comparing spiritual growth is misguided. We lack the full context to judge others. Some Christians unintentionally create barriers to faith by making church attendance difficult. One member objected to adding a Saturday service, arguing that inconveniences like crowded parking served as useful filters to thin the herd and ensure only the devoted would attend. This exclusionary mindset contradicts the principle of grace. While genuine faith naturally changes behavior, we shouldn't set standards so high that they exclude all but the most committed. Well-meaning Christians often prescribe real discipleship through demanding requirements: deeper Bible study, aggressive evangelism, extensive church involvement. Though aimed at fighting spiritual mediocrity, this creates an atmosphere of exclusivity that thins the very herd Jesus came to expand. Jesus' ministry model opposed this mentality. He came not to recruit an elite force, but to expand God's kingdom to include the excluded. His entire ministry, from his incarnation in Galilee to choosing fishermen as disciples, made salvation more accessible. The temple curtains tearing at his death symbolized this new, direct access to God for all people. While modern Christians avoid the Pharisee label, which originally meant separated one, we've created new boundary markers with terms like radical, missional, and gospel-centered to distinguish ourselves as spiritually elite. These labels, though well-intentioned, often become shortcuts for spiritual superiority. Today's Christians, fearing spiritual mediocrity, seek ways to prove exceptional commitment through social media presence, ministry involvement, or theological stances. While old-school legalism focused on prohibitions against movies, dancing, and dress codes, modern legalism has evolved into more sophisticated forms. The new legalism manifests differently across Christian subcultures. Radical Christians judge lifestyle simplicity and housing choices. Missional Christians evaluate social justice involvement. And gospel-centered Christians scrutinize theological precision. Though each emphasizes something valuable, they become problematic when turned into universal tests of authentic discipleship. Legalism rejects mercy as spiritual compromise. Jesus challenged this by deliberately healing on the Sabbath, confronting religious scholars who had created 39 categories of prohibited work. While they permitted emergency care and animal rescue, they banned routine medical treatment. The religious establishment saw Jesus as carelessly disregarding God's law for human convenience. Yet Jesus demonstrated mercy's supremacy by extending it broadly to chronic conditions, simple hunger, and non-emergencies. When his disciples plucked grain on the Sabbath, he defended their actions, though they could have waited to eat. Jesus cited David eating the forbidden showbread when hungry to illustrate God's true priorities, mercy above rigid observance. The Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. A divine gift of rest, not a legalistic test. Unlike legalists who reserve mercy for select cases, Jesus offers abundant grace to all, from doubters like Thomas to deniers like Peter and secret followers like Nicodemus. Gift projection is a sin of the spiritually passionate, zealous believers who most want to please God. It happens when we read every biblical "you" as personally directed at us, creating a self-centered spirituality. When combined with passionate pursuit of our calling, we assume our gifts should be everyone's standard. This mindset leads us to devalue those with different gifts. Using Paul's body analogy, if you're an eye, you'll dismiss ears, surround yourself with other eyes, and lose perspective on the body's other vital functions. This isn't victimless. It creates unnecessary guilt in others. When "You Aren't Doing Enough for God" books become bestsellers, sincere Christians feel inadequate because they don't share the author's specific gifts. Our unity stems from our relationship with Jesus, not from identical practices or beliefs. While uniformity creates comfortable similarity, Jesus didn't die for homogeneity. He came to save us in our differences. The world watches how Christians interact. They're drawn to love despite differences, but repelled by theological infighting. Jesus demonstrated this by choosing opposite personalities, like Simon the Zealot and Matthew the tax collector, for his inner circle. The early church's unity across social boundaries defied cultural norms. True unity requires dying to self, overlooking differences, and extending grace. This doesn't diminish spiritual passion, it redirects it. We need zealous Christians who love Scripture and obedience, but tempered with humility and recognition that God works through all believers.